I hope you were able to listen to last week's episode. We were talking with Elizabeth Cruz, Executive Director of Unify Ed, and I knew at the very beginning we weren't going to be able to fit it all into one show, and I was right. There's just too much good stuff to talk about when talking about public education. Last week, Elizabeth and I set out on an odyssey to create the ideal public school system. We're going to continue that conversation today. I am so excited about this topic. I'm Monty Brule, and you are listening to Start It Up.
We will respond to your questions, so follow us on Twitter at StartItUpGuru. Visit our website at StartItUp.guru for more information.
Now, in the 90s, here locally, And that was really about the time that the Public Education Foundation was formed and was getting going. And there were a whole group of people who were excited to contribute to public schools and try to do whatever they could. So I said, you know, maybe I can teach a class. Maybe there's something that I can do. I said, you know, I've got a degree in economics from Harvard. You know, I don't know anything about teaching necessarily, but maybe I can go in and work in a classroom and contribute. And I was told, well, you can't because you don't have a teaching certificate. You're not a licensed teacher. And so it was made pretty clear that having that certification was more important than any amount of knowledge that I might have in any particular subject area. Now, I know there have been pilot programs, there have been all kinds of experiments, and how I just categorized my experience may not even exist today. Maybe anybody can walk in and find a spot, but how do you feel about the whole issue of certification and as opposed to subject matter knowledge?
Well, I think, you know, someone can be the smartest rocket scientist in the world, but still be thrown into a classroom and not know how to teach students. So I do think that certification is important. You mentioned PEF. PEF has an amazing program called Project Inspire, where they bring in later in life professionals and give them the opportunity to earn a master's degree while they're learning how to teach in the classroom. It's a really great program, from what I understand, pretty successful in getting those alternative path teachers into the classroom, which I think is phenomenal. I do think we need some sort of process to ensure that the people that are teaching our children know how to teach our children.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I would be the last person who would want to turn me loose in a classroom without any kind of training.
Sure.
But I'm glad to know that training is available now and does exist. I once heard a former dean of the Harvard School of Education say that he blamed the Harvard Ed School for really part of the state of public education today because they are the first ones who created this degree in education. And so the emphasis began to shift away from knowing math and knowing English and knowing science to having a degree in education. And so I think that philosophy is probably partially to blame for where we are now, because I do think that there are talented people who would be willing to give some of their time to their local school, be it in Beverly Hills or Brooklyn.
Sure.
And I think that there's got to be a way to work them into the model.
Sure. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our local STEM school, which is a STEM magnet school. And they do a lot of problem-based learning. So it's a lot of students getting a problem and then figuring it out. They work with their teacher, but it's kind of them really taking their own education and really figuring it out. But they also do a lot of partnerships with business. So really working with business to figure out real-world problems and see how, like, their process is really working out in the real world. So I think absolutely you're right. We need to do, and not just locally, but I think we need to do a better job of bringing our community into the school, and not even just experts, but bringing in people that have time to give and have things to give, that want to give. And some schools do a really good job at that. Some keep their doors closed and locked.
Let's talk a little bit about the role of technology in mm-hmm. education. When I was in the seventh grade, I knew the phone numbers of every one of my friends. Now, with my iPhone, mm-hmm. I don't know anybody's phone number. I don't know that I know all of my phone numbers. So, am I being made dumber because I've got this technology here? And, you know, kids now, you know, they have access to, you know, even greater technology. How do you teach people the fundamentals of, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic mm-hmm. and still leverage technology?
Wow. So I think that is a really good question that we're still kind of figuring out as a society.
And you didn't know I was going to ask you to be the shell answer woman and have the answer to everything.
I didn't. I think that there are ways, like when you see kids and you give them the device, especially if they're getting a device for the first time, they get really excited. So it's a way to engage children and students on a different level to learn even like simple things. I've seen them use it for teaching early grade reading. So they're like hand tracing their alphabet on the iPad. And they get really excited by doing that. So it's a way to engage them. But I think that, you know, we have to balance that with, you know, pencil and paper and being able to have those conversations, because we don't want to create a generation of kids. I mean, I know that I'm guilty of doing it, that are, you know, only look at their phone or only looking down and not connecting with other people.
Stay in your seats. Class isn't over yet. You're listening to Start It Up, and our guest today is Elizabeth Cruz of Unify Ed. I'm your host, Monty Brule. With Elizabeth Cruz today, and we're trying to imagine what it would be like to start from scratch and create the ideal public school system. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Start It Up, and I'm your host, Monty Brule. Here locally, again, we've got a program, Tech Goes Home, mm-hmm. where and I hear all kinds of statistics about the huge percentage of people who don't have regular access to the internet. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's citywide? Is it just in our very poorest neighborhoods and schools? Mm-hmm. And what's the difference between a student who can access the internet and at home and mm-hmm. and one who can't?
Sure. So I think it's definitely an issue that affects the poorest among us, whether that's particularly the rural poor, which is kind of out in northern Hamilton County or around the county, but also our urban poor and everyone in between. So I think the Tech Goes Home program is really amazing, especially when it's paired with the EPB has a program. I'm not sure if it's piloted or if it's has started, where they offer discounted internet access to kids to families whose kids qualify for free and reduced lunch. So I think both of those programs are really doing a lot to close that technology gap. And it's really, really important. One of our, we host regular community convenings and conversations around like asking the community what they want to see in public education. And I'll never forget, we had this middle schooler who came and had just like come from school that day and was just completely upset because he didn't have a computer at home, or he didn't have anything to type out his assignment, and his teacher wouldn't like had given him a zero because he didn't have a typed assignment. So he was, I mean, it's those small things that really, really affect our students every day.
let's talk a little bit about the politics of education. I think that when a person turns 18 mm-hmm. and they're eligible to vote, the one thing that they ought to be required to do before they go vote is attend a school board meeting. I think it is true democracy in action. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said, the great thing about democracy is you always get the government you deserve. Mm. Well, if you go to a school board meeting, you will see exactly what that community deserves. In most communities, the school board is largely a purchasing function. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but I think here in Hamilton County, mm-hmm. our county budget is something like $665 million a year. Mm-hmm. And of that, something like $440 million goes mm-hmm. to the schools. Well, the schools in turn buy things mm-hmm. with that. They buy trucks, they buy buses, they buy food, they buy a lot of things. Public education, in part, is this huge wealth transfer from the taxpayers to private business. Mm-hmm. And if you go to a school board meeting, what you will see is one purchasing decision after another. One thing you are almost certain not to hear discussed is education. Mm-hmm. And I love mm-hmm. taking people to school board meetings. Because they walk away mystified. Mm-hmm. They're shocked. Mm-hmm. Now, when did education become so politicized? And again, it talks to spending money, more and more money. Mm-hmm. As we spend more and more money, we create this bigger and bigger wealth transfer. And I quite frankly think the reason a lot of people want to be on the school board is because you're pretty damn powerful. Mm-hmm. You get to spend a lot of money mm-hmm. and make a lot of friends.
Right. So, where to start? There's a lot to unpack there. So, I think that you said that when you go to school board, one thing you're going to see is a lot of purchasing decisions. I would argue that you don't see any of that because you don't see it. Our school board has a consent agenda platform, which means on any given month, you could go to school board. They could approve in one vote the entire agenda, and it could be over in 10 minutes. So unless you have all of the documents that the school board has to see all the bids, all the contracts, all the grants, all the field trips and the policy changes, you can go to a school board and just be mystified and have no idea what just happened. I see it all the time. When we ask people to go to school board, a lot of times they don't go back. So we have to do a much better job of engaging our school board, but our school board has to do a much better job of engaging our community. And part of that is transparency. Part of that is putting all those documents online, putting their agenda online, live streaming their meeting, or even having those meetings in the district. I think that there's a lot that needs to be done both ways, particularly from the school board's side, to make their meetings more accessible.
And my experience is that this isn't unique to any one school board.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That this is part of what is endemic nationally with public education mm-hmm. and some of the problems that we're having. So that brings us to who runs for school board. it seems like we all have an interest in the quality of public education, mm-hmm. but is this an office that a lot of people seek, or is it one where, once you're elected, you tend to be there for, 10 years?
Wow. It's kind of all of the above. So locally, this is actually the first election in many, many years where every single school board seat is being challenged. And I think that's a really great thing. Whether or not I like the current school board member or I like the challenger, whatever, I think having that ability to hold an elected official accountable during an election is a good thing for our community and for democracy. So I think that's great. We do have, I think, our longest serving school board member has been there 16 years. I could be wrong about that, but we do have a handful that have been there over 10 years. And, you know, I am a big fan of term limits. Not everybody is, but I'm a big fan of term limits at all levels. I think, you know, there's part of that constantly reinventing and innovating and learning new things, particularly in education, that I think could benefit from a constant new crop of people. Not to say that institutional knowledge isn't important, but we get a lot of that from the folks that are in the system. So we have, on our current school board, we have a handful of former educators, former administrators, but we also have business folks. We have a dentist as our school board, social worker, and hairdresser.
Well, and all of those people are important.
Absolutely. They represent our community.
Yeah. Yeah. The more the merrier. And I think that this year we're also going to have some candidate debates.
Yes. Unify Ed is hosting a debate for every school board election that's happening. So there are four happening this year. So we'll have a debate in every district.
Well, I think that's fantastic.
Thank you.
And hopefully there'll be a way to record those debates and people can access them on the internet, even if they aren't able to get out to the actual, you know, candidate debate.
Absolutely. We'll live stream them. We'll hope to have them on the radio or on the TV at some point. But we really like to use technology. So we'll have, you know, live tweeting and Facebooking. So we'll have a hashtag if you want to ask a question online or a way to ask a question via our website. So we try to engage as best we can, as many people as we can.
So as we look at kind of a summary of our conversation and we think about this ideal school system that we're developing, we've talked about racial and socioeconomic diversity among the student population. We've talked about, you know, ways to achieve that. Do you do it through housing or can you reshuffle the populations of neighboring schools to achieve that? We've talked about teacher empowerment, the need for budgetary transparency. Are there other things that would be important to creating an ideal school system?
Well, I think empowering the students is very, very important. So giving them a say in their own education.
What does that look like?
So Unify Ed has a student organizing team that really works to engage, and they're high school students on our staff. They work to engage other high school students around the county. I think one of the things that they're looking at right now is course equity. So how come there are courses that are taught in some schools and other schools don't have access to anything beyond basic education? So that's something that they're really looking, I mean, we're the gig city. If there's a class offered anywhere in Hamilton County, why can't it be offered everywhere in Hamilton County?
I've heard people talk about the International Baccalaureate program, and my understanding is that it's only offered in two public schools, Ootowah High School and Signal Mountain High School. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about course equity? Is that something that could be offered at every school?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, using our technology, I think we can begin to, like, look at ways to use those kind of programs. But I'm also talking about there are some schools in Hamilton County that don't have AP classes. So, and that's a huge, what are we preparing, what are we saying to kids in certain schools that don't have access to advanced placement? What are we saying to those kids? That we don't expect that from you. We expect that from these other kids, and that's just not okay. That's not okay with me, and it shouldn't be okay with our community.
Well, you mentioned AP classes. When I was in high school, you know, not only could you take an AP class, but you could also take technical or vocational sure. classes. Mm-hmm. And we used to have, you know, Kirkman High School, mm-hmm. which was an entire school dedicated to, mm-hmm. you know, vocational training. Is that important? I mean, is that something that should be a part of our school system? Should we say that, you know, not everyone is going to the Ivy League, not everyone is going to be a lawyer or a doctor, but maybe you can be a carpenter, maybe you can be, you know, a brick mason, and, you know, is that something that public education should be offering, or is that a role for somebody else in another sector of society?
Well, a couple things. So that also goes back to our changing economy. So we have to be careful when we talk about the glory days of Kirkman or a vocational school, that a lot of those jobs we are preparing those kids for are no longer here. So we have to be realistic about what we're doing. That being said, I do think there is a place for vocational education. And I think that, you know, we've got Sequoia, we have really great programs at some of our inner city schools around vocational education. But one thing that we saw in the past is that it was a place where those poor kids were funneled. Like, it's where we our system just kind of pushed them that way. And I think we have to be careful with those vocational programs, that kids have the ability and the option to choose what they want to do. It's not the expectation that we're putting on them, like, oh, you should probably go do the technical program, but I think people should be able to choose that. I also think STEM, technology, is kind of our Kirkman of the future. So if we're being honest about preparing and realistic about preparing kids for the future, even if they go work at VW or wherever, they're going to need to have a lot of that technical know-how. So I think being able to prepare them via STEM is something that we're going to have to do as a community.
I've heard people who work in technology mm-hmm. say that if you can read, you can code, mm-hmm. and that we should teach kids to code mm-hmm. while we're teaching them to read.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know if coding is a panacea that's, you know, going to mm-hmm. cure everything that ails our schools and our economy.
Sure.
But how many of those things are there in the STEM world mm-hmm. where we can start at a very early age mm-hmm. and just work it into our basic, you know, curriculum?
So there are some systems that allow coding to be in place of their second language requirement. So I think there are some systems that are really getting serious. I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I happen to believe that you should learn about other cultures and other languages too. So I'm actually not really sure the answer to that question. I know that coding in other cities is being done in elementaries. Teaching kids to code is happening in earlier and earlier. So our graduates that are in first grade, second grade now, they're going to graduate knowing way more than I probably ever will about technology and coding. So
we're going to take a short recess, but you got to come back. There'll be more with Elizabeth Cruz of Unify Ed. You're listening to Start It Up, and I'm your host, Monty Brule. We're going to wrap up our conversation with Elizabeth Cruz of Unify Ed. We're designing the best public school system we know how to build. I'm Monty Brule, and this is Start It Up. The other thing that seems missing in schools today is physical activity and outdoor recreation, playtime. And, you know, schools say, well, you know, there's a security hazard, you know, a risk with, you know, letting kids run wild on the playground. And I'm sure there are other reasons given for, you know, why we don't have it. There are budgetary reasons, cutbacks in the arts, cutback in recreation. Where do those things fit into our ideal school system that we're building?
I think they're so very important, particularly physical activity in the arts. I mean, kids have so much energy. If you make them sit in a desk for 8 hours a day, they're going to hate it. They're going to hate going to school, and they're not going to enjoy learning. They're going to have negative connotations with going to school. You have to let them get up and run around, whether that's in group sports or kickball or whatever it is. You can't, the expectation on a child can't be that they sit behind a desk and do test prep or whatever it is that's taking away that PE time. And same thing with arts. Kids have these amazing creative minds that, you know, they want to play, they want to create, they want to do all of these wonderful things, and if they're not allowed to do that, then they're going to have a negative connotation with school, and they're not going to enjoy learning.
When we started our conversation, we talked about how important a great school system is to a great community in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. So whether you have a child who's in the school system or not, you have a stake in the game. You have an interest in trying to make the school system better. So from the standpoint of parents, mm-hmm. how can parents be optimally involved in the school system to make it the kind of system that they would like to have? And as a non-parent, or, you know, a CEO of a company who's interested in the workforce of tomorrow and all of that, you know, how can a non-parent also be involved with the school system?
Wow. So I think it's very important for parents to be involved in their child's learning. So whether it's spending 20 minutes a day reading to them, or spending an hour helping them with their homework, or developing a connection and a relationship with every teacher that their child has, so that relationship is proactive instead of reactive, is so important. I think we all need to pay attention to our elected officials. They're the ones that we have to hold accountable for our public education system. As a community, we don't hire and fire principals, we don't hire and fire teachers, we don't hire and fire even the superintendent. But we do hire and fire our school board members. So I think those are the ones that we have to hold accountable. And by holding accountable, I don't even necessarily mean a negative connotation. I think it's asking them why they made the decisions that they made, asking them why they didn't ask questions or the questions that you wanted to hear or get answered. I think it's really engaging them. And I think most of them want that. They want to have that relationship with the community. We just have to step up and take that role.
So where do we go from here? We've been talking, you know, hypothetically, and we've, you know, I think done a good job of identifying, you know, half a dozen mm-hmm. elements that would, you know, make a great school system. Mm-hmm. But in every community across the country, we have what we have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like the old proverb says, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Mm-hmm. So what's the first step that communities can take to create that better school system?
Wow. So I think that you need to send your kids to public schools. I think that engaged parents need to get engaged in public schools, and engaged communities need to get engaged in public schools, whether that's on the local level. One thing that we're working on is developing a community schools pilot program that recognizes that schools and communities aren't in silos, and one rarely succeeds if the other one is failing. So really getting the community into the school to provide services to the community, but also services to the school. I think just getting involved, getting knowledgeable, figuring out what's going on, learning the right questions to ask. If you're a parent and you're trying to figure out whether or not to send your kid to public school, go to your local school and say, hey, I just want to see what's going on. Ask for a tour. Most schools will give you a tour. Some might not, but keep on pushing, keep on fighting for your public schools.
Well, I've got to ask this question because you mentioned sending your kids to public school. I did not largely go to public school. My daughter did not largely go to public school. And in Chattanooga, I believe we send kids to private school at twice the national rate.
Yes.
Now, in some cases, they're getting a better education. And in some cases, I don't think they necessarily are. Mm-hmm. But is that part of our culture that we just have this this strong belief in private education? Is, you know, why? What's unique about Chattanooga?
That's a really good question that I'm not sure I have the answer. I think it's definitely a part of our culture, but we also have some really negative perceptions of our public school system, that some of them are based in reality and some are not. So some may have been true 10, 20 years ago, but things have changed. So I think there needs to be a willingness of the community to take a look at our school system with a set of fresh eyes and really, really try to get involved to make it better.
So can you give us an example of some of those misconceptions?
Oh, wow. So there was a story that ran maybe 10 years ago of snakes and rats being infested at one of our public schools. To this day, when we have community meetings in that area, people from the community will come and say, oh, I heard that there were snakes and rats in that school. Like, that was 10 years ago, and it, who knows if that was even a true thing. So, like, it's one of those things that when they hear something negative, it sticks. But when they hear some or 10 things positive, you have to, like, continually reinforce it. So that's just one example.
So maybe the bottom line is we should all get involved. We should all go touch, feel, and see our schools.
Yeah.
If we like what we see, then we should be great supporters and cheerleaders. We should send our kids there. If we don't like what we see, then we should get involved and we should try to make positive change and be part of the solution and not just sit on the sidelines. Would you generally agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And if you don't like what you see at your local public school, we also have other options. We have magnet school options. We have public charter options now. We have other things, and I just, public school is for our community. Those schools belong to our community, and if we don't embrace them and support them as a community, they're going to continue to not be as successful as they should be or could be.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Elizabeth. I know that you and your husband are moving to New York soon, and truly, it is our loss that you're going to be leaving us, and we wish you the best.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I don't remember exactly how far my grandparents went in school, but none of them went very far. Maybe third grade, fourth grade, possibly even sixth grade. But they were super smart people. They had great vocabularies. They read. They taught me so much. And I've also, you know, known physicists and rocket scientists who couldn't find their way out of a wet paper bag. So I don't know what good education is. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know who's smart, who's not smart, but I do know that we all have to come together to try to create the best school system that we can. And that's a school system where I live, it's where you live, it's all across this country. We've got to do this. We've got to give our kids a chance. So thanks so much to Elizabeth Cruz for coming in and sharing her ideas and being so open and candid. And I hope we've started a conversation that will continue in the days, weeks, and months to come. You've been listening to Start It Up, and I'm your host, Monty Brule. Start It Up is a production of Bea Grizzly Media. Our executive producer is Ross Carlson. And remember, if you're gonna be a bear, be a grizzly. Come on.